CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Dr. Henry Miller, a physician, Pacific Research Institute, my guide on the pandemic. Henry's been with me since the very beginning when we did not know what it was. We didn't know what to call it. We didn't know if it was unusual. It was reported as a strange pneumonia, an unusual pneumonia in East Asia. We now know to call it COVID-19, but there are variants, which is why I need Henry's help to update, because the variant picture is changing. So are the remedies, and so is the question of the vaccines. From a Bloomberg opinion editorial, the so-called Delta variant in particular is tipping the pandemic into a frightening new stage. The highly transmissible strain, now infecting more than 100 countries, has upended poorer nations. Hospitals are overflowing in Indonesia as patients' relatives hunt desperately for oxygen cylinders. Deaths have been rising for more than a month in Africa, spiking 43% in just 1 week. Countries from Bangladesh to Zambia have recorded sky-high positivity rates. I mention that because here in the developed, so-called developed world, the rich world, we're still dealing with the variants and have not solved it. I note that the positive rates can be reported on any given day, surprisingly high and dominated by Delta. So what is a variant? What is the significance that Delta is now sweeping through the vaccinated populations, so-called vaccinated populations of, say, the UK or the US or California? And what is it that is hitting the less than developed world, the developing world, as according to the Bloomberg editorial? Henry, what is a variant? What does it mean? What does it tell us about the future of COVID-19? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. A variant is simply a mutant. And it's important to recall that in so much of the coronavirus pandemic, we're dealing with probabilities. Probabilities is the operative concept here. So whenever there's an infection, the virus replicates many times, many thousands of times. And with each replication, it probably undergoes mutations, changes in its genetic makeup. With each mutant, with each new variant, we have the opportunity for Darwinian evolution to select for the fittest. And the fittest is for a viral pathogen is the ability to be transmitted to, as in the biblical injunction, to go forth and multiply. And so it's all a matter of probabilities. And that's why it was so important early on to, as we said, flatten the curve, not only to spare hospitals and medical practitioners from being overwhelmed, but also to keep the numbers of new infections down. So that's what we're dealing with here. It's interesting to note that the virus, while it has an evolutionary advantage if it becomes more transmissible because it infects more people, it produces more of itself ad infinitum, but it doesn't have a particular advantage in killing the host. So we have two factors. We have transmissibility, the ability to spread, and we have virulence, the severity of the illness, the ability, say, to cause hospitalization or death. The virus doesn't have an interest from the Darwinian point of view in killing the host. So this is all very complicated. It's in effect a dance macabre between the virus and its host.
I follow the BBC reporting. The original virus in Wuhan had a 2.46 to 2.6 R, what is that? R aught, you say that correctly.
R naught,
yes. The version that caused Europe's first wave, this is the spring of 2020, was a 3 R naught. The Alpha variant, which emerged from the UK, Alpha, in Kent, initially it was associated with regions. Alpha is now the WHO name. scientific name is B.1.1.7. That had a R naught of 4 to 5, strikingly more aggressive than the original from Wuhan. The Delta that we're now dealing with, talking about it routinely in London, in California, in New York, the Delta, why New York City and California are now mandating that workers in New York City and California become doubly vaccinated from Delta, has a R naught of 5 to 8. It's accelerating. But Henry, here's the twist. I learned from the BBC that mumps is a 12 and measles is an 18. Is there an upper limit for the COVID-19 variants? Can it go to 18 if things turn horrible?
It could, John. It could. Measles, though, is the all-time champ in transmissibility and infectiousness. So I think that's unlikely. But we've already seen a threefold increase, and in, as your those numbers you stated indicate, we've already had about a threefold increase in transmissibility, infectiousness of SARS-CoV-2. And that has great implications for individuals and for how we manage this. So for, say, a group who are unvaccinated, a casual conversation or a casual interaction on a bike path or in a supermarket that would have been harmless when the Alpha or Wuhan variants were circulating, that's much more fraught. That's much riskier now with the more infectious Delta variant. Now, why is that? The what does transmissibility mean in the real world, in the individual? Well, it means that there's a thousandfold higher titer of virus in the nasal passages of someone who's infected. So if that person sneezes or carries on a conversation, the person is transmitting more virus and making it more likely that people who come in contact with that person are going to be exposed to an infectious dose. So that leads to the reason that we're seeing all these mask mandates beginning to be resurrected and new restrictions on workplaces and on places where shopping is done. And we're seeing more mandates for vaccination because people are really concerned about the transmissibility of the Delta variant and also the possibility that we may go farther down the Greek alphabet with even more transmissible variants of concern.
Yes, I've heard other Greek letters used in anecdotes about other variants, and it appears that it's early days, and the WHO classification, the scientific classification, and the regional classifications are all mixed up, and they're not certain. They're not etched in stone. We're doing this in real time. For example, I've heard the Brazil variant referred to as Lambda, and it's in South America, but according to the WHO, I should call that Gamma. It can be confusing, but I note that that's highly transmissible and is damaging to the economy of Brazil right now. I also note that there are other letters I've heard about, but they're just anecdotes. So I'm not certain. I see that the BBC has organized these four. So let me express what the BBC is saying, what the variants mean. For example, the virus has what the BBC calls tricks, improving how it opens the doorway to our body's cells. Does that mean how we breathe it in, Henry, how it goes straight up the nasal passages to the brain? Is that what they're talking about?
No, what they're talking about, John, is the ability to enter cells, changes in the spike protein probably, that when they attach to a host cell in the respiratory tract or beyond, they enter the cells more rapidly, more easily. So that's the, again, that's the nature of both transmissibility and perhaps virulence, the severity of the illness. So, for example, if a new variant had a greater affinity for neurological cells, that might give rise to greater rise to the mental fog that we see, or the inflammation of sensors for taste and smell, and so on. But whatever these variants are called, some of them are of tremendous concern. So you mentioned the Brazilian variant, for example. What we saw last year during some of the surges in Brazil, particularly in the state of Manaus, even though they had 76% of the population who had had natural infections and should have been immune, they were seeing reinfections because the virus continued to mutate and was no longer neutralized by natural immunity. And this is the kind of thing that we're very concerned about with new potential variants arising, that they might be able to elude the immunity conferred by the vaccines, which would require booster doses of the existing vaccines, or even the development of new vaccines to ward off new variants.
Another trick that the BBC says, the virus, almost as if it was a thinking animal, surviving longer in the air, airborne transmission, surviving longer in the air, meaning that we cannot as comfortably walk near people without masks or without our mask because the virus lingers like aerosol, Henry? Is that what they're talking about?
Yes, John. Again, this is the power of Darwinian evolution, the power to cause a variance of an organism to survive, to be more fit than their parents. And it's the nature of Darwinian evolution, and it's something that we are all concerned about.
Increasing the viral load so that patients breathe or cough out more viruses. This is the BBC. So that means these variants, are the variants themselves capable of being a bigger load of the virus when people cough?
Well, if they replicate faster because of a mutation, that is presumably is what gives rise to the higher titers of virus in the nasal passages and respiratory tract. So if there's more virus there, and we're seeing 1,000-fold greater titers than the Wuhan variant or the original one, if we're seeing these greater titers, it's more likely that when a person speaks, when a person coughs, that he or she will expel an infectious dose of the virus into the air.
I'm speaking with Dr. Henry Miller of the Pacific Research Institute. He is a physician. He's a veteran of the FDA, and we're discussing what we know now, according to the BBC, of the variants that are official for the WHO. But there are variants that are unknown or perhaps not. There's the speculation there could be more variants the longer the world remains unvaccinated, and much of the world is not vaccinated, doesn't even have the vaccines yet. So when we come back, what is to be done? This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.